From NPR News, this is Science Friday. I'm Joe Palca. You may have heard of the butterfly effect, that a puff of air from a butterfly's flapping wings in Brazil could set off a tornado in Texas, for example, because that little puff of air causes a minute change in the initial conditions of the atmosphere, and all because of that tiny change, the weather system evolves in a chaotic way that's impossible to predict. Well, the same effect could apply to the orbiting planets in our solar system. Move the Earth just an inch or so this way or that in its orbit, an almost imperceptible change compared to the massive distance it covers during that orbit. But after that shift, the gravitational effect of the Earth on other planets would be slightly different, and the system evolves, causing a multitude of unpredictable changes down the line. Well, a new study in Nature this week details thousands of scenarios that could result from tiny changes in our solar system just like that, with some interesting and you know, because we like catastrophic effects, we say interesting and catastrophic effects. So here to talk about this work is Greg Laughlin. He's a professor of astronomy and astrophysics at the University of California at Santa Cruz. He joins us from the studios of KUSP in Santa Cruz, and he's the author of an accompanying editorial in Nature this week. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Laughlin.
Thank you, Joe.
And if you have questions for Dr. Laughlin about this topic, you're welcome to give us a call. Our number is 800-989. That's 800-989-8255. I give you the whole number this time, or 800-989-TALK. And you can send us a tweet at SciFry on the Twitter system, or you can call us. That would be fine, too. Anyway, so Dr. Laughlin, we make fun about this because, it's more fun to have a catastrophe. But clearly, we're not talking about anything happening, soon.
No, certainly not. The orbits of the planets are one thing that can be predicted in the near term with extraordinary accuracy. You know, we can pinpoint eclipses across the millennia. And for the next 50 million years or so, we can chart with great confidence where the planets are going to be.
So what is going on here? When did people start getting interested in the question of what could happen billions of years out?
Well, the question of whether the planetary orbits are stable actually goes all the way back to Newton. And, you know, Newton was one of the finest minds of all time, but he explicitly sort of said that the problem of solar system planetary dynamics was too hard for any human mind to solve. And, so through the years, that's presented a real challenge to astronomers and mathematicians. And in the last 30 years or so, Newton's prediction, I guess, in a sense, came true because it's been computers that have aided human minds in understanding the very detailed motions of the planets as they stretch out into the future.
Why are computers necessary? I mean, if a human mind can't express the formula, what is it that computers are doing that allows them to discern the issues that are involved?
The human mind can express the formula. Newton
expressed they just can't do the calculations.
Okay. Exactly. Yeah. So we understand the forces, but how the forces evolve over the extremely long term, that's what you need a computer to discern.
I see. So these scientists in France, what were they doing and how did they move the bar forward in terms of this computational question?
Well, computationally, they used an enormous array of computers, the Jade supercomputer, to integrate, or that is, chart the motions of the planets in 2,500 separate cases. And in each case, they made a tiny, tiny sort of millimetric change to the position of Mercury. And over time, for the first 50 million years or so, all the simulations are basically exactly the same. But then because of chaos, they slowly start to diverge so that when you get to billions of years out into the future, all these simulations that start out almost exactly the same are showing very, very different outcomes. And the good news, if you're an optimist, you'd see the glass 99% full. The good news is that in 99% of these 2,500 simulations, the planets continue to orbit more or less as they have been doing for the last 4.5 billion years. But in this sort of 1% of the cases that's generated all this attention, Mercury gets into trouble. Mercury's orbit gets increasingly elongated and eventually crosses the orbit of Venus. And when that happens, then basically all hell can break loose.
Whoa. So why is Mercury more vulnerable to these perturbations than, say, you know, a gas giant like Jupiter or Saturn?
Mercury is the smallest planet in the solar system, and so it's the most easily pushed around. Mm-hmm. And it also,
Typical, isn't it?
Yeah. Jupiter is the bully of the solar system, and Saturn is, if you will, the enabler of Jupiter's bullying.
Right.
And so what can happen is that Mercury, its precession rate, that is the rate at which its orbit, not the planet, but the orbit itself circulates around the sun, gets locked into that of Jupiter's. And that is what causes a sort of a steady stream of pushes that makes Mercury's orbit get into trouble.
Mm-hmm. And when you said, I think I'll change your expression to when all heck breaks loose in the solar system. What kinds of
things? That's family radio.
Yeah, family radio. Well, it's scientific terms we use here. But what kinds of things are you thinking about? I mean, what would happen if Mercury comes swinging past us?
Well, in most of the cases, Mercury is simply ejected from the solar system. But if Mercury or another planet were to make a close encounter with the Earth, you might think that it would be sort of a miss is as good as a mile scenario, but it's not. In one of the particularly dramatic cases that they calculated, Mars comes within about 800 kilometers of the Earth. And if that were to happen, then both Earth and the Mars would be stretched into kind of teardrop shapes very briefly. And that stretching, the tidal friction inside the Earth would melt the Earth. And
now, that could be bad.
It would be very bad.
That's what we call the bad scenario for life on Earth. Yeah, I see. By the way, I wanted to mention that these French scientists have names. They are Drs. Lasker and Gastineau, and they're at the Observatory in Paris, Observatoire de Paris, Observatory in Paris. Why is this an intellectual game, or does this help us understand solar systems beyond the one that the Earth is in?
Yeah, when we now know of more than 300 planetary systems outside our own sun in the local galactic neighborhood. And when we look at those, we see cases where clearly disasters have occurred in the past. We see in sort of the fossil evidence of the current day orbits, we see evidence that planets have collided or have been ejected. And so it is sort of interesting to see that there are all these unstable systems or systems that were unstable out there, and yet our solar system so far has been sort of a model of clockwork predictability. And so seeing that, you know, we've got sort of a 1% chance of experiencing instability billions of years from now, that puts us more sort of firmly in the context of the whole galactic planetary census.
Right. And we do have a bit of an event horizon here, because in 5 billion years it all becomes moot, right?
That's right.
And what happens then?
Well, starting a few billion years from now, the sun, as it evolves, gets more and more luminous. And that will cause serious problems for the biosphere here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
As the sun becomes more luminous, the Earth will be sort of increasingly unable to regulate its climate as it does now. And eventually, it's not quite clear when, the models are differing on this, but eventually we'll get an environment that's much more like the kind of lead-melting surface that Venus has today.
Now, if this were more of a standard show that was politically based, I'd ask you whether the Republicans or the Democrats would do a better job of controlling the luminosity of the sun over the next billion years. But luckily, we don't have to.
I think I'll pass on that particular question.
Well, let's see if we can take a call now from one of our listeners. Remember, our number is 1-800-989-8255. And let's go to Zach in Fremont. Zach, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you very much for taking the call.
Sure.
My question relates to the interplay between the previous topic and the one that we're just discussing now, when we'll be slamming things into the moon to see what happens, and if that sort of event could actually cause this sort of spiral meltdown of interplanetary orbits.
Oh, interesting question. In case you didn't hear Dr. Laughlin, earlier in the hour we were talking about this lunar mission where they're going to crash a Centaur upper stage into the moon and watch what kinds of dust and stuff it throws up. Is that an event that could change these calculations?
Well, it won't change the calculations. The calculations are done from a statistical perspective. But remarkably, what that will do is that will change the entire future course of the solar system. For the next 50 million years or so, the changes that were imparted by that small hit on the moon will be completely negligible. But what we will do is the solar system will take a trajectory that's different from the trajectory it would have taken otherwise. We have no ability whatsoever. It's essentially possible to say whether the change is for the good or for the bad. It's just that it will be different. And this occurs every time. Every time you sort of swirl the air currents in a room, every time you swatted a fly, the butterfly effect acts to change the dynamics of the Earth's atmosphere so that the weather several weeks from now will be different from what it would have been otherwise. It's this remarkable feature of the natural world, the sensitive dependence of nonlinear systems on initial conditions that makes this sort of butterfly effect work. And this was, you know, originally sort of thought about by Poincaré back in the 1880s in response to a contest on trying to understand the stability of the solar system. So it's a very, very interesting idea and very timely.
But it's interesting, as you say, the concepts go back, so as you say, to the 1800s, but the ability to realize them through the computational efforts are only coming with the computing power that's coming onto the online now.
That's right. So you know, the ability to chart the courses of the planetary orbits over 5 billion years, and then because the system is chaotic and because one calculation isn't enough, because you need a statistical distribution, the ability to do that thousands of times is really something that is just becoming available to us and is really something that is a product of the extraordinary advances that have been made both in algorithms and in computation and in computers.
All right, let's take another call now and go to Willie in Sacramento. Willie, ooh, you okay? Welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for taking the call
sure.
and joining the program. Going back to the premise of, I guess it was, would Venus collapse or collide with the Earth? I was wondering, what would the velocity be, and can we escape by leaving the Earth and traveling to Venus?
Huh. Well, interesting question. I guess let me see if I can rephrase that. I mean, would we see this coming if Venus were actually, or Mars or Mercury for that matter, were heading toward the Earth? Would we know that that was about to happen?
Yeah, we would know. We would know millions, if not tens of millions, of years in advance that we were due for a serious problem. The final approach would take place at a, you know, velocity of something like 30 kilometers per second, but it would be something that where the orbits would sort of adjust themselves gradually over millions of years, and so it would be a highly predictable event.
We're talking with Greg Laughlin. He's a professor of astronomy and astrophysics at the University of California. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Yeah, so this would be something we'd see coming. And then I guess the second part of the question was, could we get off and go on to the other planet? I don't think that would be such a good idea.
Venus right now, it's if you're on the surface of Venus, the temperatures are hot enough to melt lead. So it's not a good backup plan.
Okay. Well, let's maybe we should see if any of our listeners have a better backup plan in mind. Let's take another call now and go to Patrick in Minneapolis. Patrick, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I'm just wondering about the simulation and visualizations involved. Like, so, you know, is the visualization at such a fine scale that you know, you see this teardrop effect happening when Mars gets close to the Earth or whatever? And also, I'm wondering about that. And then, like, if varying the cosmological constant is taken into you know, account at all, like how that would affect the simulations.
Interesting. All right.
I'll take my answer out there.
Thank you. Nice to talk to you. What about that cosmological constant?
So the cosmological constant is not included in the particular simulations that have been described here. The effect that the cosmological constant would have would be vastly smaller than a number of other effects. Perhaps the most important one would be simply the gravitational tugs from passing stars over the next few billion years. General relativity, however, Einstein's theory of general relativity is taken into account in the simulations. And remarkably, the effects of general relativity actually act to significantly stabilize the solar system. So Mercury is much less prone to getting into trouble than it would be if you don't take the general relativistic corrections into account. So it's a kind of a remarkable, a little ironic thing.
Really, so Einstein didn't make it happen, but his ability to discern that actually keeps us on a more stable footing.
Well, the way that gravity actually works, that is the way Einstein's theory describes how gravity works, that makes for a more stable environment for us, even though the effects are extraordinarily subtle.
Hmm. I want to follow up just that the caller had one other question, which was this notion of a teardrop. I guess that's when you do the simulation, you're just saying what the gravitational forces would happen. You don't have a picture of this exploding or something like that.
Right.
That's
right. That was a good question. The simulations that Lascar and Gastineau did, they just take into account the gravitational forces between the planets. And so when Mars and Earth make this dramatic close encounter, you would need to resolve the kind of gory details of that encounter, you would need to use a different kind of simulation. And so we know from simulations of stars that nearly collide, and even galaxies that nearly collide, we understand quite well how these kind of teardrop shapes arise. These are called the Roche lobes of the planets.
Hmm.
So we can sort of imagine what will happen without getting exactly the details, although it would be an interesting simulation to do.
So is that a big field? I mean, is that what astronomers do now? They do a lot of simulations, or I guess there's still obviously a lot of observational work that you need to complement these things.
Right. So astronomy, like any science, is driven at its core by observations from telescopes like the Hubble Space Telescope. And you see all this stuff going on out there in the universe. You see colliding galaxies. You see solar systems forming. And so simulations can play a role in understanding these complex and detailed phenomena that the observations are showing us.
Excellent. Well, we've run out of time. I'd like to thank my guest. Greg Laughlin is a professor of astronomy and astrophysics at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Joe.
After the break, two new space telescopes that might give us some clues about the early universe and the birth of stars. Stay with us. This is Science Friday from NPR News.